Welcome to Eagle Eye.
What a break from Manoa!
Interviewing your favorite USA Eagles around the globe.
Tony Limbaugh into the 22.
Now, here's your host, Bill Baker.
Hey, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Eagle Eye Rugby Podcast. When you get a moment, please like, subscribe, and follow on your favorite podcast player. Or if you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and subscribe and leave a comment. All right, let's jump right into it. Today's guest is the CEO of the New England Free Jacks from Major League Rugby, Alex Magleby. I've known Alex for a while now, just for a few years. I mean, we might have shared a beer or two, or whatever, but we're not calling each other for like recipes and like that. But and when I say I know him, I think a lot of people know him because he's such a friendly guy. He's such an approachable man, also, which is what you really want from leadership and you know, startups, pretty much, right? So we actually talk about that. We talk about his style as a CEO. Briefly talk about his podcast also, but mostly about the Free Jacks, you know, what they're doing right on the field and off the field. The social media channel is phenomenal. But, you know, keep in mind also, we did record this the week before the MLR season kicked off. So if he says some stuff, you're like, I already knew that, fine, whatever. Anyway, they do a great job. They moved to a new stadium. He talks about the new stadium. I mean, when I say new, built in 1937, but new to the team, you'll get that. And then also we go back a bit, you know, we go back to when Alex Magleby's story as a rugby player began. And if you don't know his history, he has pretty much played every role. You know, he's capped for USA 7s, capped for 15s. He's coached all these, coached college. You know, he has multiple championships, that kind of stuff. His resume is amazing. So anyway, check him out. Get online. You know, look him up on Wikipedia. It's awesome. Some great information on him as well. But here I am with Alex. Enjoy. Hey, Max, thanks again for jumping in. I know you're extremely busy right now, but thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
Bill, great. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. I'm having a hard time focusing on you. There's a huge Nate Ebner behind you.
I was hoping you were going to say the horse.
Well, yeah, that's but that's later. But he's just like over your shoulder, making sure you're saying the right things. So I'm worried for you.
Nate is always a presence in our lives. Fantastic. Just making sure the Free Jacks are bumper bowling us forward.
Absolutely. All right, so quick warm-up. I'm stealing this straight from the Full Contact CEO podcast.
Woo! You heard that!
I'm going to say a word or two, and you say the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
Pot roast.
Awesome.
See that? Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it's so good.
Quincy.
Home. A wonderful home.
Nice. Green.
It's Quincy. Quincy.
Quincy. Sorry, Quincy.
Z, I'm learning as well.
Green.
The woods.
Nice. Championship shield.
Soon.
Oh. Fighting words.
Yes, I know. Very diplomatic. Yeah. And lastly, Eagles overseas.
Fantastic. Come home. We've got a wonderful competition for you to share your knowledge with the rest of the young aspiring Eagles. No, soon enough. I mean, you look at the MLR, I mean, top 10 competition now, pretty soon will be top 5, right? It's growing so fast. And the on-field product in terms of quality, right?
Right. So, Alex, preparing for this, I went through, you know, some notes. I looked up your CV resume, and it's just this, I think it was about 8 pages. And originally I was going to do Alex Magleby, This Is Your Life kind of show. But you know what? We don't have 5 hours, so we're going to narrow it down a bit. Because you have some serious rugby pedigree. I mean, it's just some things. Sevens captains, you know, coaching, managerial roles, played cap for sevens and 15s. You know it all. You know what your resume is. You know, what I want to do actually is just really, I want to start from the beginning and we're going to go to the end. We're not going to skip the middle, but I think what's really important, I think I want to tell the story about you getting into the game. So where does your Alex Magleby story begin?
So from a rugby perspective, I was very fortunate to grow up in Salt Lake City, Utah. The rugby had always had some connection to the Valley. You know, you got to remember, you know, a big portion of the island of Tonga are LDS, same with Samoa. And so in some ways, Salt Lake City has been a mecca And with that, rugby's been there. Rugby was at BYU, was at the University of Utah for years. There was random clubs that played. And then Park City was connected to the old ski team tournament. So it's always been a rugby culture. Mid-70s, a gentleman by the name of Larry Gelwick started the Highland Rugby program that was at my high school. My mom went to that high school. My brothers went to that high school. We just kind of lived in that neighborhood. And just very lucky that, you know, Larry had created this unbelievable program that was fantastic at educating young men through the sport of rugby. And through that process, the teams became very, very good. In the mid-80s, 85, USA Rugby created a sanctioned high school national championship. That was in May of each year. And Highland would win state championships and then go and play in the national championships and win more than we would lose. So I had this unbelievable experience learning the game from just this unbelievable program. The year after I graduated, they went to the schoolboys championships. Geez, where was it? In South Africa. I can't even remember. And took third, wow. Right? They beat most other high schools from around the world. Physical specimens came from that group. My era, there were four guys that played in the NFL. So real athletes. You know, we all played football in the fall together. And then in the winter, you either wrestled, you played basketball, and you definitely skied. And in the spring, you know, it was baseball. Soccer was a spring sport when we were growing up in Utah. Or rugby at our high school. But our high school was club, so three or four high schools would come together. So we had all the guys we played football against. That talent would be aggregated into these different high school clubs. So it was fantastic. So I got an education that just really nobody else received. Traveled the world, you know, played in Australia, played in New Zealand. This was all in high school. And so when I went to college, I tried to get as far away as I possibly could. So I ended up in New Hampshire, in the woods of New Hampshire at Dartmouth, who has a storied program. So it happens to have a storied program. I went there for the engineering school, the flexibility of the curriculum, the ability to ski. It was just the right fit for me personally, the size of the school. And lo and behold, it had this unbelievable rugby legacy. So again, very fortunate that that happened and continued to play in college. And that was the time when the game was going professional and the Sevens Circuit started. So before I even graduated, you know, I was playing for the national team, which was pretty cool.
Wow. Well, so stepping back a bit, I mean, do you remember that first moment where you had a rugby ball in your hand and you were playing as a kid, let's say, and it was a wow moment? It was, you know what, this is what I want to do. Or was that not until later, maybe?
Yeah, no, I think it was just part of our, you know, I was the youngest of three boys. All of my friends were the youngest of boys. There was 10 of us that were all the youngest in our family with families with lots of boys. And a lot of our older brothers played in a lot of different sports, but rugby was part of it, and the Highland rugby team was part of it. So it was something that we saw a lot growing up. So every once in a while you'd be at a game and you'd see – and that was – the ball seemed way more oval back then. It seemed way more round back then, really, is my recollection. But it was just what – it was the cool thing to do. You know, it was like, wow, you can go out there and tackle and run around in the mud. And so in that way, it was just part of kind of, okay, when we get to ninth grade, we get a tryout for the rugby team.
Now, were you around the time when, you know, Forever Strong was based, the movie Forever Strong?
Yes, that was my era, kind of around those 2 or 3 years. A good friend at the time, Patrick Doors, had come down from Seattle, and he was one of the main characters in it. And I think the compelling thing about that movie is just that really was how kind of Larry ran the program, and it was about the development of the human, of the young man, and that was I think why the on field stuff ended up happening, because that was such a focus of his.
Now, if you were in the movie as your name, as a character, who would you want to play Alex Magleby?
It's funny enough that there's a character in there with dreadlocks, and this is, I think it came out when I was playing for the U.S. and I had dreads. I was the red dread, so people made that connection. Who knows? You know, there was a couple guys on my team at the time who had dreads and didn't want to shower. So it's just, you know, it was a flanker, so that's probably who would I have been. Yeah.
So when you got to Dartmouth, I've been to that campus a few times, so I could say I went to Dartmouth. I've been there for, I don't know if they do the bonfires anymore, but they used to do these huge bonfires.
Homecoming still, and the freshmen
yeah,
run around.
Great.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah, and when I was playing at Keene State, we would play Dartmouth a couple times. And this is
the Granite Cup.
Yes, exactly. Well, that was after I left. I was early 90s. But yeah, it's the players that were after me talk about that quite a bit. But we had some good matches. Well, we obviously didn't win any of them, but we came close. That's all that matters at this point in my life. But I do remember back then they were building a clubhouse even then, or they had plans of building a clubhouse because they were able to get donations from alumni, whoever else. And you still have a bit of your foot in the door at Dartmouth. You know, talk about that program. You know, why? What is it about that program where these bunches come in and they build this beautiful field with beautiful clubhouse and workout facilities?
Yeah, there's a long legacy there, right? In 1951, the sport was reintroduced to campus. It had existed in the 1870s, but that Walter Camp in the 1880s codified the rules of rugby football, which became football. The scrum turned into the scrimmage line. 11s, you know, 15s were reduced to 11s. No mauling into the try zone. But the game disappeared. Rugby on our campus became the football team. And then after World War II, a lot of vets came back. They brought the sport. 1951, opportunity in Bermuda to go on a spring break. So a bunch of the guys on the football team were like, we'll take that. And they created the Dartmouth Rugby Football Club like a lot of other institutions did. And they went down and, you know, won some trophies and had a great time. And it started as a touring side like that for athletes on campus. And then the season happened and it quickly built. In 1958, first American University to tour in the UK. That was followed by Sports Illustrated. They went 5-1-1. They played Wasps. I mean, that was real.
Wow.
Real rugby. And that just continued, you know, first institution to tour in Ireland. And so this long touring history, but then great teams on the field. 1965 team undefeated. You know, Cal's 1965 team was undefeated. How great would have that been if at the time they were able to play in a national championship? And it continued to grow. And always centered around the idea of student leadership. That's always been the model. And that's been the case for 7 decades now. And so when I came here, the game was going more professional. And what Dartmouth was really wise to do is to continue to develop endowment so that all of the things could be provided so that the students could still have the same experience of student leadership. So coaching, medical, all of those pieces to make sure, and facility, to make sure that the experience was as good as, you know, the alums and family and friends had when they were part of the program. Now, Corey Ford, who the clubhouse is named after, Corey was a writer for Field & Stream, Sports Illustrated. He was in the USS in World War II, is rumored to be, you know, a recruiter for the CIA. I've never seen evidence of that, but it was he was on campus in the 50s and the 60s, you know, but he would be half the year in New York, part of the Algonquin Club and writing, and just a really unique character. And he was a great mentor for a lot of the students. And he had a house in town. So when he passed away in the late 60s, he bequeathed that to Dartmouth as long as they used the proceeds to establish a rugby clubhouse, because that was kind of the hangout area. His house had become the hangout area for the rugby team and the boxing team and others while he was around. And so that started the germination of the facility endowment. Of course, we had been building an endowment for just the operations piece of it. And in time, we were able to finally get through. It wasn't so much a money thing. You know, and you talk about the early 90s, it was shovel ready. And then there was a couple lawsuits around where with some neighbors and all things that ended up working out in the end. And Dartmouth has, a beautiful, beautiful facility now, as you know.
Yeah, absolutely unbelievable.
Hired Carl Sumption.
That's right.
Yeah, so Dartmouth was super excited. And, you know, Kyle played at BYU. The 5 national championships BYU has won. And BYU is an awesome program where when Kyle was on the field, he was a captain for a couple of years, All-American, played for the Sabercats, played for Sacramento Pro Team, if you remember that. You know, he was at Rooney for a long time, and he's been, an assistant at West Point for the last few years. So, I mean, that'll be awesome for the Dartmouth student-athletes to have somebody like Kyle here.
How's an appointment like Kyle work, though? Because he's coming into town, you know, does he also have a job with the university? Or is it just strictly rugby?
So it's a university job. So everything, anything Dartmouth rugby is through the institution. So if I, you know, donate money to the club, I'm donating money to the college. And the college then ties that into the designation of the gift where it's to go. And then employees and everything else come through the athletic department. And we're lucky in that way that we report directly to the athletic department, or some rugby clubs. I think Cornell still, I think it does through student services and not through athletics, which just is different challenges.
Yeah. So earlier I mentioned, I talked about your list of accomplishments or your roles. I mean, like I said, you've worn so many hats. You've had so many roles, player, coach, manager, sevens, 15s, all that fun stuff. Jumping from one role to another, and the first question that came to my mind when I thought about that was, why can't you keep a job?
That's great. That's great.
No. Seriously, though, you know, what is it about you? What's your driving force? You know, what's the inspiration for you to take on all these roles year in, year out?
They're just opportunities, right? And it's opportunities to learn something new and to be challenged, but it's you see something that has potential and you want it to, like, if I wasn't doing this, I would be rehabbing old houses or something, because it's, you're seeing something that has something there and you want to help get it to what it could be, to reach its potential. And that's building systems and figuring out the look and feel and getting it to work. That to me is the really, really fun part. Once it's kind of in that place, like, the day-to-day management of keeping it what it is isn't as much of a fun challenge. It doesn't mean that I won't do that or can't do that. It's just that those things, if I could pick, would be how I would approach most things. And so that's how most things have been. You know, whether it was we started a sports analytics company in the early 2000s because it didn't exist. And we built that and we were able to give that to other people to carry on. And it's same with rugby. I love rugby to death, but if it was another sport or – another thing, you'd probably see that change or evolution, if it is an evolution, doing something else.
All right, let's jump to Free Jacks.
Is that a boring answer? You're like, all right, okay.
Yeah, well, we'll edit that one out. No, that was great.
All right. Whatever, dude.
Take two. I'm going to email you a script.
Start over.
Yeah. No, it was good. All right, so Free Jacks, you know, same thing, another role for you, another involvement in the game. You know, can you talk a bit about how it began? You know, I'm assuming you weren't sitting in Starbucks one day and someone walked up to you and said, "Hey, Alex, I got an idea. You know, the new professional league. Do you want to help us out with the team in New England?" You know, how did that come about?
You know, I'd been on the other side of it for a long time, you know, helping with the national teams, the national programs, and really developing nationally and connecting internationally and making all that work and trying to figure out the best way to possibly continue to grow the game, which to me is sharing the game. And I felt probably the best way to do that would be to burn it hot locally. There was a new league that had just started, Major League Rugby. What I liked about MLR at the time was the structure. It was structured in a way that it didn't have to be the NFL tomorrow, that it realized that it was going to be a growth, but it's not going to get to, you know, 100,000 seat stadiums tomorrow, nor does it have to. And it was a prudent business model, very much based on Major League Soccer, where there is some control over your costs, where unfortunately we see the vast majority of pro competitions fail because costs skyrocket, so people can compete today, or they can bring in way bigger audience than they can afford today, which costs money. And those kill professional, 99% of all professional sports leagues fail because of costs just explode. And the MLR model had some clean, clear cost structures that I think give it an opportunity to grow. And that was really attractive. And my partner and I, Eric Anderson, one of my partners now, but we'd been talking about what is the next thing rugby-wise in terms of how do we put more fire on this for over a decade. And it just seemed like this model was one that was pretty smart in how it was structured. So hat tip to the founders of MLR. And I was I had already decided I was going to be leaving USA Rugby at the end of 2018. Kind of my job there had been done. Kind of took it as far as I could. And it was an opportunity for others to keep moving it forward, which they have. And so it was a this is a perfect time to see if we can get this done. And so we, you know, did our due diligence and we laid out our, you know, 20-year business model, and here we are today, continuing to grow. And, you know, in many ways, it's exactly how we thought it would go, and in some ways, it's totally different.
Now, there must have been some serious headaches early on. You know, is there anything early on that was just a huge struggle for you to get this team off the ground?
I think at the time, because we were also trying to decide the best way to grow it, we wanted to give everybody locally as much as possible an opportunity to be a part of it and to grow. We didn't have the runway to make that happen. You know, there were some talented local coaches and local players that just need a longer runway. And in order to be competitive, you know, in hindsight, I probably would have done things a bit different in that regard and provided a bit more safety, where I ended up having to spend a lot of time on the rugby side, which wasn't the original vision, in order to help, you know, a very young team who wasn't used to professionalism, you know, in the coaching staff, on the field. They just weren't – they hadn't had those exposures, you know, going from coaching club rugby twice a week, where it's still very recreational in some ways. It doesn't mean people aren't working hard and everything else, to kind of 7 days on the trot, the pressures, the public nature of it is a challenge. That takes time for people to get those experiences and repetitions. So I ended up spending a lot of time helping in that regard and sometimes hindering perhaps, where in hindsight I probably would have done that a bit different.
Now, it seems one of the highlights now in the few years you've been around is the new stadium, is Veterans Memorial Stadium. And when I say new, I mean new to the team. You know,
new
I was
1937.
Not 100 years old yet.
Yeah.
I was at that game end of the season last year, and it was just walking up to the field. I felt like I was going to a Patriots game or something like that. You know, it had that atmosphere, had that festival atmosphere, the huge video board, you know, Ollie on the mic doing MC work, you know. You know, what was that the goal from day one, is to get into that kind of facility? I know Weymouth worked out, you know, it got you guys on the field, but obviously that wasn't your plan.
Yeah, so when we did the Carrot Cup, you know, the point of that was to try to learn as fast as we can on and off the field, like we just discussed, staff, players-wise, and we learned a lot. As important is, what is the business going to look like? Who's our audience? What are the best facilities to use? And we tested, what, 4 different facilities during that time frame? And we learned a lot. And there weren't a lot of options in the greater Boston area or even throughout New England that were turnkey for professional rugby and even not even ready for a type of festival event that we like to have. So we decided, after running through all those tests and where we could grow, that Union Point for the next year or two would give us a really good opportunity, because it was a clean landscape. We could build it. We could grow with it. We could help drive the fan experience to what we wanted it to be. Obviously, then the pandemic hit, and we had to put the brakes on what we were trying to do in 20. And then you're coming into 21, which was, we were limited to 1,200 people per game and all of those other pieces that had an impact, and probably operationally at the time too. We weren't so good at our jobs operationally that we couldn't deal with fires as well. And so, you know, we had a game where parking lots are flooded and things are blowing over, and all great lessons. But the process has always been, we're going to continue to look and find a long-term home, whether that's building a stadium, which again is something that we would love to do. That's long-term. Or finding a great city partner or other institutional partner that really wants to grow with us. And we were able to find that with the city of Quincy. It's a veterans is, you know, built in 1937, WPA project, fantastic construction. But and it's beautiful. It's in Marymount Park, just a beautiful setting. But it's got all the modern amenities, you know, the new video board and the new locker rooms and the new seating, and then just the intimacy of that venue. It's very cool. And you walk over the hill and you can smell the barbecue and you can see people catching up with old friends and meeting new friends. So cool. And then it can grow. That space, you know, as MLR continues to grow, we've set some targets internally with MLR, you know, going from 3,000 seats to 5,000 seats to 7,500 seats to 10,000 to, if, you know, we have a World Cup in 31, can we get the vast majority of our teams with the capacity for 15,000 people. And there's along that process, there's probably some abilities to continue to grow in that venue. So we're really excited about that. And of course, the city of Quincy has a great vision, a healthy, strong vision for what it wants to do as a what was a sleepy community south of Boston, now to be kind of the next seaport. And we're 8 miles from Boston. It's a premier venue, right on the Red Line, right off the highway. When again, with a very hungry city that's excited to grow and has awesome diversity, combined with a great tradition.
And you recently met with the mayor of Quincy.
Yeah, a couple
that was nice to meet. Any key to the city or anything like that?
just a great smile, and he's super excited about the Free Jacks, and he's excited about what rugby can do, you know, for their kids and students, and just the. You know, we've talked a lot about that with the mayor and the city, just the power that rugby has, sport in general. I mean, sport's transcendent if it's done right, but rugby in particular. Just everybody gets to tackle if it's tackle rugby, but regardless, if it's non-contact rugby, everybody gets to run with the ball and make decisions. Whatever decision they make, we all have to support it, and that's awesome. And then, by the way, we get off the field and we break bread together, even though we're rivals. And I think that's really cool. And we've got our Learn to Play initiative starting. Ginny Cronish just came on board to be our marketing manager for community impact, and there'll be a lot of KPIs there, and just the number of people who are getting an opportunity to play the game. And that's what we're really excited about throughout New England.
Right. And you're still a bit away from your first home match of 2022. What should fans expect walking into Veterans Memorial Stadium this year?
Yeah, so I think that March 12th will be awesome because that's St. Paddy's. So it'll be a green wash, and there'll be great music, great food. The new hospitality chalet we just finalized, and that'll seat 120, but have capacity for 400. You know, that's elevated right on top of the field, which will be awesome. There'll be things for kids to learn how to pass. There'll be things for adults to catch up with old friends and bring their kids, run around. It'll just be a whole day match festival where, you know, the Six Nations is that day, Ireland, England. That's an 11:45 kickoff, I think. So we'll have that playing. I'm still finalizing what curtain raisers will be that day. The band, the match, you know, then a whole host of things going around that.
So, one thing your team does extremely well, is social media. You know, from early on, you know, it seems like throughout the off season, there's constant, posts, and even when new signings come in, while other teams seem to be waiting to make all their announcements at a later date, you know, was the social media presence something early on also this team really wanted to concentrate on? Because it's not just the regular posts, Alex. It's also, you know, multiple podcasts, everything from TK's to Tammy McQueen's to yours.
Yeah. So if we take a step back and just say, what are we trying to accomplish here? In 2018, let's build a world-class sports entertainment company. That's where we want to go, that helps communities have better lives through, you know, awesome and inspiring events that bring joy and experiences that bring joy. So what we're effectively trying to do, and you've experienced some of this, is you come to our match festivals, you come to, you know, events that we're part of that are really fun and just good people, getting along with good people and meeting new people and seeing the drama of the game happen, but just having an awesome time, and it's joyful. And then so capturing that and then be able to share that 30 seconds to a minute a day, you know, with our growing audience. And that's what we've set out to do. And so sometimes I think we do that really well, that kind of capturing that and giving that feel of community and fun and a bit of cheekiness and execution too, you know, over social. That's the goal. And so how do we best continue to grow audiences? And I think for us, we decided that there's a lot of micro audiences out there that we can pull in through various means, and we can share what we're about with them. I think the podcasts have been part of that, and that's been really successful for us in terms of just getting conversations started or that we would otherwise be having, and being able to share those with audiences that don't quite know who the Free Jacks are yet or quite don't know what rugby is yet, and having them hear what we're about from people that they really respect. And so that's one of many parts to bring in new audiences so they have this experience. So then they too can have you know, better lives. I mean, at the end of the day, rugby's been a game changer for all of us. So we want to share that.
And what was behind you starting the Full Contact CEO podcast? I just listened to Angela Ruggiero, and I got Dan Lyle queued up. I know Dan's probably like a 3-hour interview. He likes to talk.
Dan's was great because it went through the whole. Yeah, there were so many parts to it that we just want. I mean, Dan and I go way back. You know, he was kind of a big brother to me on that when I was an Eagle.
Yeah.
So there was just so many parts that I wanted to capture, which was great. Angela's fantastic. Full Contact. We're having those conversations, really. So why aren't we sharing them? And it forces me to be vulnerable, and as opposed to me just turning around to staff and saying, you guys need to, you know, be engaging and share what we're about with the world so that we can, you know, bring in new audience and share our experiences with them. You guys have to do that. So our social owned and operated channels have to do that. It's no. This is on all of us. Like, it's not – I can't hide behind the curtain. It's really important to be out front and be vulnerable. And, you know, I'm not an expert in podcasting and social media, but it's important that I'm learning and sharing those conversations and help building audience as well with the Free Jacks.
So I know you're gonna say it's a team effort, which is the proper answer, but who gets the credit for the collars on the uniforms? Because it's still a league-wide favorite.
You know, I think just early on we said that's what we were going to do. You know, that part of our entire brand is tradition, yet modern. You know, we're just talking about Veterans Memorial. Tradition, beautiful tradition, great legacy, but modern. And that kind of – I think that's our sport too. Our sport is very much like – it's buttoned up, but it's cheeky. It's highly physical, but it's graceful. It has these juxtapositions that I think make it so wonderful to be a part of. The lifestyle of rugby, not necessarily, you know, it's really cool. And I think selfishly we wanted clothes that we could wear around and, you know, wear in a business meeting and still be all right, right? So yeah. The collars, I think, were always just part of that, part of it for us. Something that's going to last ages. You look at you going back to Dartmouth, we were just talking about, you know, the D jersey. That's the same jersey that the 1880 team wore. You could see a black and white photo, and you know exactly who that was because of the structure of it. And I think that's important for us. It really, in many ways, is an expression of our brand, which is an expression of our values.
So let's talk academy program. You were one of the teams who led the way with the academy teams, a number around New England, which is, you know, quite a bit of miles to travel. Great involvement with TK Ollie, whoever else, and also recently with the Collegiate Rugby All-Star Champions. You know, how is that academy program going, and how long do you think it's going to be until we see someone maybe come up through the academy program that will take the pitch with the Free Jacks?
Yeah, so a couple pieces to that. One, when we set out to build the academy, we're like, wait a minute, what is it going to look like in 10 years? So let's start from there. Let's build the interstate, even though we don't quite have the numbers going through it and we haven't resourced all the stops on the interstate, but let's make sure we do that to connect all the dots. So that's what we kind of, you know, when we announced a year ago, that was really what we're setting out to do. Its primary goal is to increase the number of people coming into the system and then making sure that anybody in the system has opportunities that otherwise didn't exist. Better level coaching, opportunities to be identified for higher honors, opportunities for higher level competition on top of the great experiences that they may already be having in their high school or club or college teams. So that's a really important piece. And I think we're already starting to see players getting reps, whether with the independents, whether with the junior jacks, that are already starting to push their way up. Now, the college group that just played is awesome. You got to remember with the college group, once they graduate from college, in order to come into Major League Rugby, they've got to go through the draft, right? Oh, yeah. So, you know, in many cases with the college athletes, we're giving them those reps and those identification opportunities so that they're better for Major League Rugby. Whereas the club and high school players, that's a bit different. And I think you're already starting to see players who have gone from really successful there who are now training players, you know, and like Cam Davidowitz is on contract. He was with the Indies. Kyle Sakira 2 years ago was with the Indies. They are now, you know, full MLR players, which is very cool. And locally, you know, kind of born and bred. And that's really awesome. The other piece to this is as robust of a pathway, if not more, on the women's side. The key missing piece, though, of course, is there's not yet a professional 15s women's competition yet, right? And so right now it's kind of you're there and you're playing club and then you're playing for the Indies maybe, but then you're going to the Olympic team or the women's Eagles team, and we don't have yet that that piece.
Well, the Premier 15s is hopefully helping out that piece become a reality. You know, we got, 17 USA Eagles over there playing for Exeter, Cell Sharks, wherever else. So that, and it's drawing a lot of TV audience overseas. So you'd assume that would help our chances of getting a professional league here?
Yeah, I would think so, right? And I think, you know, that was the great thing about Angela's podcast the other day, is just don't replicate what you're doing on the men because you know it. You know, really make sure that you understand your investment timelines and know that they're going to be different, and know that it's not just about shrinking it and pinking it, as she would say, or lifting and shifting it. You know, it's got to be its own thing. And it's awesome that they're competing in the Premiership. That's really good. And it's going to make them better players. It'll also make England better. But how awesome would that be if they were in North America playing in front of home audiences, which they deserve on a week-to-week basis. So it will be really exciting when we can, you know, everybody who's involved can make that happen.
So another thing about the Free Jacks, you recently merged with Heritage Sports Ventures. Talk about that deal. You know, what do they bring to the table?
Yep. So three pieces really on the Heritage side. One is facility. So they're the operator. So now we're the operator of the City of Quincy's stadium for non-civic events, at least for the next 12 years. That's super exciting. Yeah. Heritage also brings massive amounts of experience from a sports entertainment acumen point of view. You know, PGA, Celtics, Tampa Bay, CBS Radio, Sports Hub Radio, Governors, you know, Sports Commission, some real talented, experienced folks who are now part of our bigger, you know, company. Our agency will continue to do great work in that regard. But now we have internally just very easily, you know, an uplift on our fan experience because of the additional staff and the quality of that staff. You know, they've been operating that venue for a while, so they know the ins and outs. And so, I mean, yesterday we were on our staff call, and I'm just looking at my Zoom, and there was, you know, it's 6x6 rows or whatever. It's pretty cool. It's really cool. So that just gives us an opportunity to grow faster. So, and then when the Free Jacks aren't playing, if again taking the idea of we're creating these magical experiences, that may be a Hootie and the Blowfish concert, and then the people who come to that then learn about the Free Jacks, who then become fans of the Free Jacks, and that just continues to build audience for these experiences.
Well, a tight neighborhood. So Hootie would work. Metallica would not work in that neighborhood.
Yeah. Yes. Unfortunately.
Yeah. One last thing about the Free Jacks just came to mind. Was there any effort to maybe get Madison Hughes, local,
I would love
possibly
Madison
on the roster?
Yeah, I would love Madison to play in Major League Rugby. I think he'd do fantastic, yeah. And certainly I'd love him to be a Free Jack. You know, Madison took a step away from rugby for a bit, you know, and I think he's healing up, and he's also exploring other opportunities. He's a very intelligent person, and he's exploring some of those options. And then hopefully, you know, we see him back in a U.S. uniform, winning a gold medal in France.
That'd be nice for everybody, for the game, and for him.
It'd be great. Yes, as Angela said on the pod the other day, is, you know, America loves winners, and that's, you know, with the hockey change on the U.S. women's side, just how important that was.
You know, there's one thing that got me in that interview, Alex, and we've all been preaching this for a long time, and I know a few girls who play hockey as well. Girls I've coached in soccer also play ice hockey, and they said the same thing. They can't hit anybody. And I said, that's why you should play rugby. It's the same rules. Why would there be different rules in
exactly.
ice hockey?
Exactly. You know, we see that. I used to see that at Dartmouth. Some of the best crossovers were hockey players, women and men, but certainly women. Yeah, and just an opportunity to, wait a minute, I can hit safely just like the men can.
Sure. Yeah. Or they can't hit for a 4-month ice hockey season. Then they come out to the pitch and like, okay, one of you is going to die.
Yeah. Lacrosse is the same way, you know.
All right. So, Alex, looking back at your career thus far, I mean, you got a long way to go until you retire. Did you ever think you would have a career in rugby off field?
You know, going back to that original conversation, it was not. It was always about what the experience was. Like, what is the, I always thought I'd be in a position where I'd be hopefully helping to develop systems and mm-hmm. build things and things that were, you know, consequential, that were helping people have better lives. The tool, the medium by which that happened, I didn't ever think it would be rugby. I'm really glad that it has been, but it could have been something else, you know. But I'm really thankful that it has been rugby because it's such an enriching culture. It can be.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm lucky in that regard. But in terms of the what and the do, it could have been a lot of other things.
Right. All right. And finally, Alex, to end it, and again, taken from the Full Contact CEO podcast, everyone listen on your favorite podcast player, but with a twist. If I was running the Free Jacks, what should I be focused on?
First and foremost, I just think making sure that the fan has a clarity around what experience they can get, and then they have an ability to change that experience for what they're looking for and for what works. Ensuring that the players are and the rugby part of it is at the core. But then there's a lot of other things that can add to it, because that alone isn't going to generate the audiences in the short term that we all want to see for the game, right? So,
yeah,
and be patient, right? Be really patient. That there's parts of this that we're having to do now, community participation, that are generational, and there's parts of this, you know, people coming to a festival and seeing a great concert and kind of liking rugby and, you know, you know, kind of those middle fans. But yeah, just making sure, I think my experience has been that our people, our members, have an ability to affect the changes they want to see, and making that as easy as possible.
Well, I don't know what any of that means, so don't hire me. Alex, man, again, thank you so much for your time.
It'd be like, Bill, it'd be like, just making, like, you can text me anytime, right? Like, and that's that, yeah. And like, I think our fans have been able to do that, at least the core group that's been with us for the first couple of years, is they can affect change, because it's everybody's team, it's everybody's club, it's everybody's brand. And I think that probably is one of the big positives that we've had. And people can also complain and say that this is not working for me. Okay, great, let's talk through it.
And I think, you know what, I really feel you not sitting behind a desk all the time, except for now, is huge for the fans, especially in New England. You know, when they see someone hard working, they get a lot of credit for them. Even if they fumble the ball or whatever, they still get a lot of credit. I mean, to see you running across the pitch with the horse's head on or sharing pints with fans in a pub, I think it's huge.
So, yeah, but that's who we are, right? And that's the great thing. It's just there's an authenticity to our members and to our fans, which is really awesome. You know, you're running Eagle Eye podcast and the brand and everything else. So cool. Like, it shows a massive passion for the game, but it's brought actually something unique to, you know, folks who want to know more about American, you know, rugby stars mm-hmm. and future rugby stars, which is awesome. And then, you know, we've got the Jacks Rangers, you know, podcast, and you know what's happened there, and then with the Scrum of the Earth, our fans are committed to kind of sharing in this journey and creating things that make the journey better for everybody else. I think that's very cool.
All right, buddy, I'm going to let you go. Again, thanks for your time. Say a little Nate for me. Nice pat in the head for the horse. Hope to see you very soon at pitch side.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. See you soon.